In preparing for this offertory sermonette, I started looking into some of the offerings and sacrifices that people have made as recorded in the Bible. And one obviously stood out. The incident is recorded in Genesis 22 and is, of course, the sacrifice that Abraham was commanded to make. The more I read through this passage, the more it struck me that this wasn't just some children's story or a fable written about a fictional character. This was a real-life event involving our spiritual ancestors, if not our physical ones. These were real people with real dreams, plans, and emotions. And sometimes these elements aren't recorded and can be very easily overlooked. What I'd like to do today is to look at Abraham's greatest offering and see what we can learn from it and how it relates to us today. So let's start by turning to Genesis 22, and we'll read through what happened. In Genesis 22, starting in verse 1, "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt," or better translated, test or prove, "Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham? And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of." And notice Abraham's response. "And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up, and went unto the place of which God had told him." Just like Mr. Armstrong mentioned in the message we heard this morning, when he was told to leave. These few verses alone tell us a lot about Abraham's character. Again, no questions, no negotiations. He rose up, packed up his things, and set off. Verse 4, "Then on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off." This wasn't an instant test where Abraham had to make an on-the-spot decision and that was it. They had travelled for 3 days before they could even see the place that they had to go to in the distance. So for 3 long days he had to be totally committed to doing what God had told him to go and do. In verse 5, "And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide here, ye with the ass, and I and the lad will go up yonder and worship, and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spoke unto Abraham his father, and said, My father. And he said, Here I am, my son. And he said, Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together." Again, what is not recorded is what must have been going through Abraham's mind throughout this entire event. Had he concluded that God wouldn't really ask him to sacrifice his son, through which he had been promised a great nation would be born? Or was he just trying to appease Isaac's curiosity? Either way, the emotions of a moment like that are overwhelming. Verse 9, "And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, and laid the wood in the order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood." We're not told how compliant Isaac was at this stage, but again, either way, the emotions involved would just be overwhelming. Verse 10, "And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Eternal called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am." Undoubtedly a little relieved. "And he said, Lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him, a ram caught in a thicket by his thorns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son." Again, we aren't told about any of the interactions directly after these events between Abraham and Isaac. They had at least 3 days' travel to get back home. Were they chatting with Abraham saying, "See, son, I told you God would work it out"? Or was it an awkward silence, with Isaac muttering under his breath, "I can't believe you did that. Or just wait until I tell Mum." Likewise, what did they tell Sarah when they got home? I can just imagine a young Isaac sat round the dinner table saying, "You'll never guess what Dad nearly did." Or did they perhaps agree that what happened in the hills stayed in the hills? We don't know. But at this point, the point is, these were real people, and one day we will meet them. Now that will be some conversation over a G&T. So what was the result of Abraham's obedience? If we carry on reading in verse 15, "And the angel of the Eternal called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time, and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Eternal, for because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed, as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of thine enemies, and in thy seed shall all the nations of earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." The blessings that have been enjoyed in recent history by Britain, America, and the other Israelitish nations has largely, if not totally, been as a result of this event. So why did God require this level of offering from Abraham? We know that God can read the heart, so why require this level of offering? What God had planned to do with Abraham and his children was so immense that he had to be totally convinced that Abraham would not only strive in his heart to do the right thing, to live God's way and follow his commandments, but that the desire and will in his heart would be converted into action. As the old saying goes, actions speak louder than words. If God required this level of commitment from Abraham so he could build a physical nation, what are the implications for us? What offering or sacrifice would be required before God would build his spirit-born family? In order to make it possible, God the Father did have to make that sacrifice and allow his son to die. Unlike Isaac, however, who was oblivious to what was going to happen while he grew up, and even while he was traveling with his father those 3 days into the hills, to the place that God had chosen, Christ knew right from the beginning the sacrifice that he was going to have to make. As Christ himself said, "What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? But for this cause came I unto this hour." That's recorded in John 12:27. So what about us today? Just as God tested or proved physical Israel in the wilderness to see if they would obey him or not using the manna and the Sabbath, God is testing us as spiritual Israel today. We don't have the manna, but we still do have the Sabbaths, both the weekly and the annual, to show us God's plan, to set us apart as God's church, and to prove our obedience. As today is one of those annual Sabbaths, we will shortly be taking up an offering, as commanded, as we read in Deuteronomy 16, verses 16 and 17. Being an offertory sermonette, everybody's got their fingers there. In Deuteronomy 16, we read, verse 16, "Three times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Eternal thy God in the place which he shall choose, in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, in the Feast of Weeks, today, and in the Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Eternal empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Eternal thy God, which he hath given thee." Surely, given that what we are being offered is not just to live our physical lives as a physical nation, but to live for all eternity as spirit-born children of God, there must be more that we need to offer or sacrifice so that God can say of each of us, as he did of Abraham, "Now I know that you fear God." Well, there is, and it's a big one. Just put in your notes Romans 12 and verse 1. "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service." From the moment God called us and started working with us, he has been and will continue to be proving us, not based on a physical one-off sacrifice, but on the remainder of our physical lives our living sacrifice. Just as God had to be sure that Abraham would apply what he had been taught and turn it into action, God is doing the same with us, each and every day. Thankfully, God can read our hearts. He knows the real motives behind the actions, and through the course of our lives is getting to know whether we truly fear him and will do his will, come what may. So why is being proved or being known by God so important? If you turn, please, to Matthew 7, we'll see just how vital this is. Matthew 7, and starting in verse 21. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into thy kingdom, into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have we cast out devils? And in thy name done many wonderful works? And then I will profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Iniquity being lawlessness, disobedience. Notice that we are talking about actions here. If you just go up a few verses back up to 15, it says, Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore by their fruits you shall know them. So the importance of being known by God is a matter of spiritual life or death. The offering we'll be taking up might appear totally insignificant, given what we've just read, and physically it may be in comparison. But from a spiritual point of view, it is another opportunity for God to be able to know of a surety that we will be obedient and do what he has commanded us to do, no matter how hard or inconvenient it may be. And as a result, he will be able to say of us individually, Now I know. While we take up the offering, we will have some music, which is taken from Psalm 88, O Thou God of My Salvation, which will be sung by Mrs. Paula Henderson.